Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
A lot of them aren't even pretending to be in charge.
Slow the testing down.
Remove him from office.
No justice, no peace.
Cast a vote that will make you proud.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
With all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Hello and welcome to the Betches Sup Podcast. I'm Amanda Duberin.
And I'm Caitlin Bird.
And if you're just tuning in, the Betches Sup Podcast is your daily rundown of all the crazy shit going on in the news brought to you by your two funniest friends.
Which is us.
Happy Wednesday, Caitlin. Do you have a DNC hangover?
Oh, well, fortunately, my giant glass of wine last night was enough to get me through the 2 hours of prime time. So
I really enjoyed your live tweeting of the convention.
I had a lot of people who were like, actually, you know, people need hope and people are looking forward to things.
Yeah.
I do not disagree with any of that. I was actually very touched by the roll call, which was like, I don't think we should ever go back to the previous version of roll calls, which were terrible.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it's so weird because my parents were delegates in 92.
Cool. For New York.
Like, I paying attention to conventions now, I'm like, wow. This is so weird and different. But yeah, it's fun, I guess, to live tweet it. As long as there's liquor, I'm not doing that. Sober. Mm-mm.
I know. It is like wild to think what this would be like. Because like, I don't know if they would have let us go. I think they probably would have. So we probably would have like sent some sort of team. And yeah, I don't think I would have. I don't know if I could have handled that. That's so much socializing.
Yeah.
And networking. And
yeah,
I can't do either of those things.
I went in person to the 2012 convention, not as a delegate. I was just there for political nerds. That's like, you know, that's like the thing you get to do. It's like your World Cup. Yeah, I went every 4 years. And it was like so much fun. There was so much drinking.
Yeah.
I was not surprised, but a lot of times it's like, okay, events don't start till 10 a.m. because everybody's rolling out.
totally. So last night marked the second night of the first ever Zoom DNC. It featured impeccable hosting by Tracy Ellis Ross, the official nomination of Joe Biden, a performance by John Legend, and one menacing plate of calamari. I thoroughly enjoyed watching last night, and I was so surprised. I agree. I thought the roll call was so charming.
It was lovely. And you get to see, they chose some beautiful locations for some states where I would have never thought that was what it would look like, or a territory. U.S. Virgin Islands, like, showed up. And I was like, oh my gosh, that like, blue suit, it was like a turquoise.
I know.
I'm like, okay.
I know.
Let's put in for your statehood, okay, if you're going to show up like that.
I know. I haven't felt patriotic, and I actually can't remember the last time. But watch that. Like, I thought it, in theory, when I was reading before it, I thought it was going to be really like, this land is your land. And it did have that effect. But it also, like, what I noticed last night was that I'm pretty sure this, I read, and I think this is correct, that there are only two speakers under 50 for this entire convention. But, like, there was a pretty good range of age diversity. Like, in every other part of the convention, there seems to be a lot more age diversity. So I feel like some of the people running this, like, know what's up.
Yeah. And there was that shared keynote that started the night, which was done by a lot of rising stars. I really like that they highlighted states. I really like that they chose, obviously they're going to choose swing states. Obviously they're going to choose a lot of the newer freshmen who have come on board. Connor Lamb was there. Mm-hmm. Stacey Abrams was part of it. I think in a normal year, you give it to Stacey Abrams and you don't think about anything else.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone would have tuned in to watch Stacey Abrams, like, thoroughly dismantle Donald Trump and express hope for the future.
I think that Elise tweeted that, like, they should have just had on the Chiron rightful governor of Georgia when she spoke.
I mean, and like, especially when you add that to the reality right now of, like, what we're going through and the information that we got about the election in 2016, it feels like there are a lot of people who have had offices taken from them. Speaking of tonight's speaker, is the person who should be president right now.
Yeah.
But it was really beautifully done. I loved the roll call showing people from all over, and you got to see them, like, in their home states and show the pride, and you had so many indigenous peoples, which I really loved. Wearing things that just reflected the wide range of culture that we have in the country. And I thought that was a really great way of showing Democratic Party diversity in a really, like, it was really heartwarming. You know, I kind of almost love this country.
It really, I know, it was so weird. How was it so charming that it just, like, overcame everyone's cynicism? Like, everyone on Twitter was like, this is delightful. I was dreading it. I was like, it's going to be 30 minutes of this. I would have watched an hour of it.
Yeah. Yeah. We can absolutely do roll call like this every single time going forward.
Oh,
let's produce it. I don't care what it takes. Like, as long as there's no floor vote, let's hopefully we'll never have that happen again.
By far, my favorite was, I think her name's Kazi Watkins from North Carolina. We'll play a clip, but she was just like, I've been doing this a long time. Let me be plain. Black people are the backbone of this party. If we don't vote, you lose. So let's go. And there's this big white guy behind her just nodding the whole time as she was saying it.
I've been doing this for a long time, so let me just be plain. Black people, especially black women, are the backbone of this party. And if we don't show up, Democrats don't get elected. I'm putting on my mask, and we're going to every corner in North Carolina to help organize, because we need to make sure everyone shows up for Joe Biden. He will show up for us. North Carolina cast 39 votes for Bernie Sanders and 83 votes for the next president of the United States, Joe Biden.
It was amazing.
So great.
Yeah. What were some other highlights for you?
Other highlights. I think that, like, you kind of have to love Jill Biden.
Yeah.
So much. Dr. Biden it was so lovely, so warm, so human. She didn't serve. And I would like to point out, like, she has two Dem predecessors for the first lady position who are very, very different and have a very different energy than Joe Biden has. And nonetheless, she's a in the same energy as far as succession goes. She will be a first lady who's very involved. You can sense that. She's not going to take anything or be quiet and demure, and I really appreciated that. Tonight, everyone was like, we're just voting for Jill Biden, basically. Like, okay, we can do this now, because Jill.
Right. I mean, the people that are going to win this election for Joe Biden are Michelle Obama, Jim Clyburn, Jill Biden, and Michelle Obama.
Yeah, again.
For sure.
We just got to put her there again, because I did not get a chance to talk about Michelle Obama's incredible. That speech was,
now's the time.
One of the most incredible things I've ever seen. It was. I would argue her most incredible speech at the DNC, despite the fact that she's given three of them, and she's or four, I guess. She spoke in 2012. Does anyone remember that? That's not that year was not a year. I think that was like the. Weirdly enough, like the highlight of 2012 was like the low light of 2020, which is Bill Clinton speaking.
Right.
Obama is continuing to be one of the most compelling speakers and representatives of the American spirit. And I think, like, that just everybody's, you can't stop talking about it 2 days later.
I know. And it was so masterful, especially when, like, obviously Barack Obama, I mean, there are so many people you compare her to, so I don't know why I'm just comparing her to her husband, but I assume she's sort of like models her style maybe a little bit off his. But you know, like, my favorite thing about watching the Michelle Obama documentary was that we all know about her now is that she's not interested in politics, in fighting. She doesn't have political ambitions. She's obviously very charismatic and social, but I don't think she like loves the crowd. I don't think it like feeds her. But in the documentary, you can see times when like Barack does come and you can tell he like loves it. And so the fact that she is able to have this type of performance and like she's not doing it because she's thinking maybe in 8 years I'll be favored for some sort of high office. She's doing it because literally she has to. She knows the influence she has.
Yeah. I saw Michelle Obama like way back in 2000 when I remember when she first kind of popped onto the national scene, and I recognized in her the same thing that I'd recognized in so many of my mom and so many other political wives who are just like, nah. I mean, like, yeah. I'm doing this for you. And like, that's a lot of love right there. And that's why it was so compelling to me. It's always compelling to me when she steps out and chooses to use her voice, which is so powerful, but also just the way she uses it. She very clearly has a very separate political identity from her husband. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They come as a package deal in many ways, but like Michelle Obama is very deeply cements her own sense of like what she thinks is important in politics, and she clearly votes on her own side. She's not an extension of her husband.
Yeah.
They are a political unit, but like when she does her own thing, she's speaking from her perspective and not their perspective. And I think that that's just, it's awesome to see the level of empowerment on this side of the aisle that women have been able to gain in politics, despite the limitations of like the first lady position, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I feel like we know her. It's like she's only been Barack Obama's husband for, I don't know, maybe 30 years, but she's been a Black woman living in America for her entire life. So she has so much to like speak to and talk about that has nothing to do with him. And I feel like we're getting to see a lot more of that. And yeah, don't sleep on her podcast. It's great.
Yeah.
Highlighting the week. I like another highlight, I think, was AOC's speech, even though people were really frustrated that she only got a minute. And then there was some hysteria last night because people misunderstood why she nominated Bernie Sanders. People thought that was like an intentional slight to undermine. I think even some news outlets that should have known better sort of tweeted something to that effect. This is like somebody had to do it. Like this, how else was it going to happen? And it made perfect sense that she would be the one to do that.
Yeah, it was procedural. It's very straightforward. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I love people coming to the process. I love people who are new to the process. I love people who are enthusiastic about politics. I'm depressed that it took this. This should probably not be the reason I got into politics, but I understand if it is, because like the world's on fire, it's really important to pay attention. And I think that's really, it's good, like stay here. But at the same time, like a lot of this stuff is just really old and it's procedural. And I understand if people don't like know that, but like, people get like panicked about so many things. I think it was frustrating for me that she didn't have an official speaking slot kind of to talk about the Dem freshman. There should be a slot that is about the 2018 blue wave that demonstrates them in 2020 and talks about how important the work in Congress is. And that was a slot for her. That was a slot that could have been done there. So, you know, when we talk about the procedural thing, one of the issues is not just like, oh, she only got 1 minute, which, you know, is appropriate for a procedural effort and everything. But that, you know, when they set up the convention, they didn't want to talk about Congress as much. They really left all the focus, and rightfully, it is Joe Biden's nominating convention. But, like, usually there's a slot somewhere in there where we can talk about what Democrats want to do as a party. And it's really kind of been the anti-Trump Joe Biden show.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, Good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They've done a good job, I think, of having like young faces and good age diversity, but they haven't communicated how that progressed, like how younger people's more progressive agendas, how they plan, how that's going to look from like a legislative standpoint. The thing with AOC too is like, I'm sure she knew what that speaking part would mean when she accepted it. But I do feel like, well, of course, if you have AOC, it could have been somebody else that did that for Bernie. I don't even want to say for Bernie because that played that role that maybe it wouldn't have been descended upon as like, what was she doing? Exactly. Because she's associated with like this left wing of the party. Like, I don't know, maybe you could have had like Chuck Schumer do that part. Well, maybe Chuck Schumer wouldn't have done it. Anybody else. And let her talk for 5 minutes about what you just talked about. Like, it is appropriate. I'm sure people that are very into that coalition, it is a real full circle thing to see that, especially because he was so... I think he was pretty important in maybe her rising profile nationally. I think she probably was going to win her race, was going to have success no matter what. She like won her primary in a landslide, but yeah, it's like she didn't, they asked her to do this. She did it. And the next day story is that she like undermined Joe Biden, who she has made an effort to repeatedly say, of course I support Joe Biden.
Yeah, and it's very much the Democrats in disarray thing that they love to do. And I'm not going to say the Democratic Party is in disarray because it's definitely not. And this is where we get into like lowlights, right? Which yes. is like, you know, there's not a concerted effort to reach goals and use resources to reach those goals. So like Bill Clinton was the reason that the speech he gave off the top of his head, because
I can't remember any of it,
2012 was probably the reason that Barack Obama, like that was like the nail in the coffin. Yeah. I think and that 47% one was pretty bad too, but like I think fundamentally everyone got really excited about beating Mitt Romney the night he pointed out all of those things and he gave that stem winder of a speech on the convention. I was on the convention floor for that. Mm-hmm. And now it's just like, everything has shifted so dramatically in these 8 years about how we talk about our country, about how we think about leadership, about the fact that the Clinton years look far more complex and nuanced and unfortunately misguided with the progress that we've made. And of course, Bill personally, who is obviously, I mean, you can make a very good argument. There's a very good argument to be made that he's kind of a piece of shit. Yeah. And yet he was also an incredibly effective president, which is awful because it just shows that there's not a huge correlation between decent human decency and being good at that job. Although I appreciate that Joe Biden is not a terrible person, which is a running theme.
Perfect, but probably not a terrible person.
Even empathy. Continuing thing. Joe Biden will care about a person and look them in their eyes. And you're like, is this where we are now?
Yeah.
We're so proud of Bill being like, cares about humans.
No, I'm at the point where I'm just like, oh, he loves his family. That's nice. That's rare. I don't think that Trump loves his family. I don't. Of course not. Like after Jill, there was like a cute like off air moment of Joe and Jill Biden. And he just like is like, oh my God, you did so good. I love you. And I just thought it was funny because also the night before we saw like an off air moment with Bernie Sanders and his wife where she's like, stand up straight. He's like, enough. Stop it. But yeah, I'm sure like, I mean, just contrasting that with like Melania swatting Trump's hand away. But I was like worried because Jill Biden, like she referred to them as a broken family because of the deaths in the family. But I was like, oh no, Melania's going to see that. And she's like, oh, there's something for me here. Trumps know all about broken families. What can I steal from this one?
Maybe she'll just copy like parts of like Michelle's again.
I think so.
It could happen too.
Yeah. It is what it is.
Oh, stealing things. That's exactly what they do. That is like this election, which is what they're in progress for.
Yeah. But I had my question for you, Caitlin, because you've tweeted about this a little bit, is like, I guess this is the first year where I'm really thinking about, like, I assume the DNC, what it's for, what the convention is for, is to animate Democrats, because it's like, who else is watching?
Yeah.
Or is the point to get clips that all of the news will cover, or, you know, Fox News will cover in whatever way it does, to hopefully then get at the swing people so they can be exposed? Like, what do you think the goal, what is the goal normally? Is that the goal this time?
I mean, it's generally like a combination, right? It, por que no los dos? You want to do a little bit of everything. Normally there's a lot of speeches that start like around, I would say 6 o'clock, 6-7 o'clock is when you're expected to be in the hall and they're doing procedural stuff and blah, 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 blah. And then, you got the early speakers and you might have like people from across the pool, you know, you might have, I listened to one from the CEO of Costco when I was there in 2012. So, you know, normally what you're doing is you're trying to like rile up the team, talk about like, you know, give some slots to people who, you know, are doing the stuff day to day, but maybe don't get a lot of attention. And then when you get into prime time, it's all about getting your people animated, you know, having those beautiful visions on television of an animated convention hall. Now, we don't have that this year. So you really are relying a lot more heavily on the messaging to carry into that news cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, something like a Michelle Obama that eats up lots of news time and shows people like Democrats. The other thing, though, is that, like, this is usually the only time people are paying attention to politics. That is not true anymore. We are now are basically all on red alert at all times. But it does have the same effect as, like, we want to show who the party is and show that we have, like, all the space and Joe Biden is not going to forget you is what is being said to Republicans, white suburban voters, white swing voters, who might say, hey, you know, I don't want to vote for Trump, but I don't know if I can bring myself to vote for Biden. And the party is leaning heavily on saying, yes, you can. You can vote for Joe Biden.
You have to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I worry really deeply about that. First of all, because it should not be an argument.
Yeah.
Like, we should not be trying to argue people into this. So you look around and determine whether or not any of this makes sense. And if you are still in the space where you're like, I'm not sure, then maybe you are just not fit to participate in this country. Maybe you should, like, you know, go find a hobby on November 3rd instead of, like, going to vote.
Right.
Not that I think that people should be suppressed, but, like, if you're struggling,
right?
Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And I just want more attention on Democratic base voters because, you know, people make it sound like Hillary Clinton lost by like a bajillion votes and they really love the idea that she was like horribly beaten by Trump. She lost by 80,000 votes spread across 3 states. In 2 of those 3 states, those votes were suppressed out of existence. Yeah. She lost something like 100,000 votes in Milwaukee. That's not a function of not visiting. That is a function of Scott Walker and the Republican legislature in Wisconsin actively suppressing the vote that would turn out for her. Same thing happened with Rick Snyder in the last of his legacy in 2016 in Michigan, where Mitchell Maddow pointed this out, a huge chunk of specifically Black communities no longer had local representation that they had voted for. So,
wow.
The people who are controlling their local budgets were not elected. So you're already having this disintegration of representative government happening in both of those states. And then people are like, oh, well, you know, we need to turn Republicans. You do not need to return Republicans. You need to make sure voters can get their votes in.
Yeah. And those are just the states that we know of recently. I mean, like, I was reading recently about how, I mean, if formerly incarcerated people in Florida were always had always had their voting rights, you would never have Rick Scott. You would not have George W. Bush. You would not have the Iraq War. You would not have Donald Trump. Like the amount of people, I think it's 25% of people in America who can't vote because of a former felony conviction. And when you hear this, it's not somebody who's like, this includes people who have done everything. They have served every moment of their, like they're done with parole, they're done with everything. 25% of people who have completed all of that in the United States but are still ineligible to vote live in Florida. And that's like by design.
Yes. Yes. And now there's a poll tax effectively on getting your voting rights back. Yeah. And I think about like, these are the structural barriers to voting that don't get a lot of attention and aren't as flashy as having John Kasich talk for like 5 minutes or whatever. And if you really focus on how can people get voting done, you know, let's make it easier to vote. There are a lot of people who are actually animated right now who would not normally care about politics because this has been so catastrophic for so many people that this is the only thing that they feel like you have any agency over. And we've got Louis DeJoy just destroying the postal service in the middle of a pandemic where we're all deeply relying on mail and parcel delivery to survive. For those of us who are lucky enough not to have to go outside all the time.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Yesterday, Louis DeJoy, I guess he didn't want to be somebody that history remembered as suppressing millions of votes and letting an authoritarian regime just extend power endlessly. I guess that's not something he wanted on his Wikipedia page. So he said he's going to stop making changes to the Postal Service until after the election. This doesn't really address some of the changes that have already been made. Like, there's no answer for what happens to those sorting machines that sort 35,000 ballots. There's no answer to if those are coming back. There's still looking at the House, at Carolyn Maloney's law. She's a rep from New York. Her bill will basically say you can't, anything that, however things were on January 20th of 2020 is how things need to be in November. So I believe that means it would retroactively apply. Like anything you've removed, you have to get it back. But, you know, I wasn't really sure what to make of this news. Like I heard reactions like this is still, we've still taken way too many steps in the wrong direction. He's still going to testify. The Postal Service is still hugely underfunded. Nancy Pelosi is still pushing to introduce legislation that would include $25 billion for USPS. And again, DeJoy is going to, he's going to testify before the Senate on Friday and the House on Monday. I'm curious to see, I mean, things still need to change and there are still issues, but yeah, what do we make of his announcement yesterday versus how does this make our election safer and more reliable?
Yeah, so the big issue is that elections kind of have to be, elections are usually prepped up to 8 months to a year ahead of time, right? You're trying to make sure the infrastructure is there because it's a massive undertaking. It's done at the state level. Yeah. So overwhelmingly, states are making their own rules about how much they're going to be able to do. And then there's coordination with the post office from multiple levels, right, all the way through to local to make sure that everything can handle the amount of volume that they're going to get. Now, because of the pandemic, where you've seen a lot of states start to implement vote by mail in order to try to get around the reality that, like, it's not safe for people to necessarily congregate en masse at polling places like normal. And we can't necessarily accommodate social distancing at every polling place. So you want to make sure New York has early voting, for example. So they're going to try to, I'm sure, push that a lot harder. So that way people vote in drips and drabs across the week ahead. You're going to see a lot of people, like, they're trying to mobilize it now. The damage that's been done to the Postal Service, can we fix it in enough time to keep that problem from running into November 3rd? And the answer is, I don't know. And the thing is, there's also a lot of things he can continue to drag his feet on, to not fix. I think one of the big issues is, like, looking through the experience of living under Trump, is how few tools there are once you have given executive power to someone like this. There's not a ton. People are like, do this, impeach him, blah, blah. It's like, these things only matter insofar as Republicans will co-sign them, because we do not have enough control over government. And without those levers, even if we did have those levers, it could very easily be treated as partisan, you know? Mm-hmm. So you've got to be careful with these things, because it's not as simple as, oh, you know, we're good on the election, therefore, you know, we stopped him. It's like, well, these, they're running effects. Then the time it takes to put everything back into place is also lost time, you know?
Yeah.
And even then, you know, they're going to be running behind, because we've had so many catastrophic delays on smaller, easier things. People are not getting prescriptions on time. They're not getting checks, bills.
I've been asking myself, like, when are we going to start hearing about people dying because of this? Like, surely that has happened, even if that cause of death was not, like, surely that has happened.
Yeah.
Most veterans get their medicine through the mail.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, but now we're seeing, it's like, what, you're surprised he kills people?
Yeah, I mean, he's been killing people. If you think about the death toll, I just keep remembering Maria, Hurricane Maria, and what happened in Puerto Rico, and the complete lack of regard to what had happened, and the immediate impulse to grift money off of, you know, the entire endeavor. And I think about it, and I think, you know, this is building up to something like this, where we ran into a catastrophe that he just doesn't care as long as it's not affecting the right people. And he's doing this thing right now where, like, we still have issues with Russian interference based off of what we know from about 2016. We still have issues around the logistics of voting. We still have issues around turnout and being able to get people over the voter suppression hurdles. When you, just because leadership changes or you stop, you know, it's like the saying, like, why do you hit yourself in the head with a hammer? Because it feels so good when they stop. Mm. Like, when you, just because you stop doesn't mean the damage, previous damage isn't there. You have to repair that. And I want to see Democrats take more initiative talking about who we need to be.
Yeah, yeah. I think this year, more people are realizing that for most of this country, or a lot of the country, voting has always been an effort that takes many steps and is not just like, you show up and it's good, and you drive 10 minutes away. And maybe that's good in the future for sort of like, it's hard because, like, you don't want to reframe voting as something that is challenging and does take effort. But I did appreciate how Michelle Obama in her speech sort of did that and was like, you got to commit to being part of this. And, like, we say a lot, it's a fight, but it's like, no, really, you have to, like, suit up and wait in line. I appreciate that she said that, because I struggle with the balance of, like, just vote. It's easy. It's nothing. You have to, with, like, you might take some effort this year and you have to do it, but, like, here's how.
Absolutely. And I think about it, like, voting is like an adult chore. It's not exciting. I wish I could say, like, this is going to be exciting every time. Actually, if you're doing it right, it should be very boring. It should be like, oh, here's good choice number one, and here's, like, other good choice number two. Which person do I believe more in and think is more competent for this job? I'll evaluate. Give me, like, 2-3 weeks. Okay, I've seen their relative campaigns. I've checked on how they interact with people. I've watched their efforts. And I think, choice A is the one I want to go with. That should be, it should be like that boring. It should be like ordering off of a menu in theory, but like, it's still like a chore in the sense of like, just like you don't want to change your oil all the time. Like some of us don't want to get into our cars and change our oil. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't change your oil. You should do that.
Right. Like just because you don't like Mediterranean food doesn't mean you go to a restaurant and you starve and then also kill 170,000 people.
you want to be thoughtful with your decision.
Get a fucking mezza plate and call it a day. It's not that bad. All right. We can do it. 80 days, 80 something days, and then maybe we'll have something else to talk about.
Maybe we'll have a democracy again.
Maybe. Oh my God. Okay, so that's perfect. Until the return of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast.
The Betches Sup Podcast is produced by Sean Kilby and Amanda Duberman. Our podcast managers are Mike Coscarelli and Sean Kilby. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Artwork by Brittany Levine. Be sure to follow us at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send your emails to sup@betches.com.
Betches.